Welcome to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Governor Peter Shumlin wants to make big changes to the way that health care payments are made in Vermont. It's called the all-payer model, and it does away with the current system known as fee-for-service. That's when health care providers are reimbursed for every procedure and every test that a patient gets. Instead, it moves to a system where the providers are paid a set amount of money to keep their patients healthy, and the new approach also rewards quality of care.
Where we pay our docs, our nurses, and our health care providers for keeping us healthy, not for the fee-for-service system that we currently have. So instead of paying for every test, every procedure, doctors and hospitals would receive a set of payments for frankly, keeping us alive and healthy and feeling good.
So how exactly would this new system work, and how will it affect patient care and the role of health care providers? These are some of the questions we have for our guest today. Al Gobay, who is the chairman of the Green Mountain Care Board, a group that oversees virtually every aspect of health care in Vermont. Al, welcome back to Vermont Edition.
How are you?
Great to have you here.
Thank you.
And you can join the conversation here. Give us a call at 1-800-639-2211. Your thoughts about this so-called all-payer model, does it make sense to you? Should doctors be reimbursed to try to keep you healthy and to encourage you to take a number of prevention steps to improve your health? 1-800-639-2211. On today's program, we're going to start off discussing this concept with Al Gobay, and then a little later in the program, we're going to hear from a number of provider groups about their thoughts about moving to this very different payment system. It's a subject I'm sure we will return to many times in the future, and our goal today is to give everyone a general understanding of this important issue. So, Al, the overall concept of all-payer seems pretty straightforward. Move away from this current fee-for-service system. Shift to a system where healthcare providers have a financial incentive to keep you healthy, but then you start to look at all the details, and this becomes very, very complicated. So to start off with, explain to us why you feel the current fee-for-service system is not an effective way to contain costs or even provide a high quality of service to Vermonters.
Absolutely. So when healthcare financing really hit the ground after World War II, basically people that used the healthcare system used it for a one-time event. If you think about an appendicitis, for example, you went to the hospital, you had surgery, and then you went home. Today, the world is very different. 86% of healthcare spending is currently spent on chronic conditions in the United States. And that changes the whole game, meaning folks have something in their personal health that requires constant monitoring and constant intervention from the healthcare system. For example, type 1 diabetes, type 2 diabetes, COPD. And so in America today, 50% of the people have a chronic condition, and over a third of the people have more than one. And so what that does is that causes hyperinflation in healthcare costs, because people that are trying to access the healthcare system need to do so on a regular basis. And whenever anything goes wrong, they end up basically in an emergency room. And, you know, that's not the best way to care for them. And so the idea behind this is, if we can get the incentives right in healthcare, that we can incent doctors to take care of people before they need those interventions. So let's be clear what's going on here, especially with our seniors. Most seniors have multiple doctors and multiple prescriptions, and the coordination of that care is really, really important. And when that doesn't happen well, things go wrong for the patient, and that's a very big problem for them as a person, and it's a big problem for society because it costs a lot of money. So that's the reason behind this change.
So if we look at the fee-for-service system, let's say I have a bad cough. I go to see my primary care doctor. Bingo. There's a payment. The doctor orders some tests. Well, there's another payment. It's possible that a specialist will need to look at these test results. Well, we have another payment. Specialists might order even some more tests. We have another payment. So is it your feeling that this system, the current system, has too much duplication and that a fair amount of unnecessary care is taking place?
There's certainly been studies that have talked about unnecessary care. I mean, I think, the number is, 33% or something of care could be deemed unnecessary. You know, I'll let the folks at Dartmouth and at UVM Medical Center, work on those studies and try to figure out exactly how to get at that. But let me give you a different scenario. Let's say you go to your primary care doctor and you have diabetes. And you are, you're there to have your A1C checked, which is basically, how's your blood sugar doing? But you say to your doctor, I'm feeling a little blue lately. I just haven't felt good lately. The question is, does that doctor in today's system have the time to be able to talk to you about a mental health issue? Does the doctor have the access to a mental health system that will be able to support you if you need to talk to someone? And how is that all coordinated? Because if you have a mental health issue and diabetes, it gets very, very, very hard to control your blood sugar. And this has been, this has been proven by countless studies. And the point is that, we're not keeping that individual healthy. We're actually just treating the diabetic part of it. And so the whole idea behind keeping people healthy is building an integrated model where things like primary care, mental health, substance abuse are integrated so that people can access what they need.
So we got this email from Janet, who writes us, "I believe there's a fundamental flaw in the approach of paying doctors based on their producing healthy outcomes for their patients. It's the patients themselves who are ultimately responsible for the outcome of many medical treatments. For example, the patient is the one who must stop smoking in order to become healthier. How will the all-payer system account for patients not complying with their doctor's advice?"
Yeah, so that's the question we get from providers all the time. I was at Porter Hospital earlier in the week, and we had a conversation about this. And, there's a basically a money answer, and then there's a societal answer. So let's do society first. The person who wrote the email is 100% right. We have to take accountability and responsibility for our own health. We do. So everyone should do that. We're not saying you shouldn't. But the second point is that in all of the ways that we pay for healthcare, we do what's called actuarial analysis. And that may not sound exciting, but it actually kind of is. And we determine what it costs to basically care for a given population. For example, Blue Cross and MVP on Vermont Health Connect, we set the rates for basically 60-some thousand people for Blue Cross and, another large group of people for MVP. We do that by estimating the health need of that population, and we've been very accurate in what we've been able to do working with the two insurance companies. That takes into account all the bad health out there. It's already baked in the cake. So we're not saying to the doctors, you need to take care of a group of people that are unhealthy and get paid as if they were all, vegan triathletes. So this has to be a good business model for the providers, or they won't find it attractive.
So let's see how this works in the real world. Let's say I'm a primary care physician and I have 500 patients. I don't know what the average is, but let's say it's 500. So under this proposed system, am I going to receive a set amount of money every month for each patient that I have, and that you're hoping then that that will encourage me to spend more time with these patients to keep them healthy?
You could, and there's talk of doing that that type of thing. It wouldn't be 100% of the revenue you take in, and that's basically called a panel payment to a physician. But that's not the way I would look at this. Really, what we're talking about is making a population-based payment to a large group of providers, not just a single provider. And so that large group of providers then takes responsibility for the health of a population. They also determine how the providers are paid. Because one key thing I want to talk about is that this is supposed to be provider-led. This is not supposed to be state-led. And so right now in our state, we have an entity called OneCare. And OneCare received permission from the federal government to operate a new Medicare payment system called NextGen. NextGen is a population-based payment system, and OneCare, is a pretty big entity when you put all the hospitals and independent physicians and FQHCs that are a part of it. And how they want to pay doctors should be left up to them. But that is certainly one way to pay them. I also want to say this. We need to pay primary care doctors better and nurse practitioners in our state. this has to be part of this model, because primary care doctors coming into the model is the way that it's the way that it started. They are the foundation of it. And so if this is not a good thing for them, it will not be attractive for them. They won't come.
Today in the program, our guest is Al Gobay, who's chairman of the Green Mountain Care Board. We're discussing the all-payer financial model for healthcare. Your thoughts, 1-800-639-2211. You can always send us an email at vermontedition@vpr.net or give us a call, 1-800-639-2211. We've gotten a couple of emails on this whole idea about Medicare being included in this. And this one says, this is from Al, shouldn't Medicare recipients be concerned that funds currently used to pay providers for our care will now be funneled through a Vermont government agency and pooled with all other payment sources, including underfunded Medicaid? Won't Medicare funds be diluted and redirected for the care of underfunded Vermonters?
Can Al really ask Al a question? That is a really good question, and there's some pieces of it. You know, there's more than one question in there. First, no, Medicare money does not come into the state agencies, does not come into any part of state government. Basically, the group of providers I talked about, OneCare, would be able to make an agreement with the federal government, with Medicare at the federal level, to take responsibility and accountability for the health of a population under a program called NextGen. And under that, which is another piece of this, no changes can come to a Medicare beneficiary's rights, basically. Free provider choice, the formulary for prescription drugs, the appeal process, everything that they are used to with their Medicaid program does not change. The thing that they should see different is they should see that their primary care doctor is actually happy with this new program, and that they may be able to spend more time with their doctor if they so choose, and they should see better coordination of care. That's what they should see. With our Medicaid program, the money actually does go into a state agency, and then it would be paid out through a program similar to NextGen to a group of providers. And so the all-payer part of this is getting Medicaid, Medicare, and commercial insurance to all pay in a similar way, not a similar amount, but under similar rules to this group of providers, and then turning it over to them to basically decide what is in the best interest working with the patient and or the client.
So right now, if healthcare utilization increases significantly in a given year, we see that with higher premiums from the health insurance companies, right?
Yes, we do.
Under this model, who's on the hook? Who's at risk if utilization skyrockets? It's not the health insurance companies anymore.
Well, actually, you just hit the nail on the head. So there's a lot of different types of risk that a payer sees. Remember, Medicare and Medicaid are payers. MVP and Blue Cross are payers. We think of those as health insurance companies, but we call them all payers. So when you're a payer, you're at risk for enrollment if more people sign up. We saw that in our Medicaid program. If you're a payer, you're at risk for new technology, and you're at risk for pharmaceuticals, and you're at risk for utilization. In the question that you asked is, who's responsible for utilization? We're saying let's take utilization risk and put it on the providers. We're not saying that they don't deserve the increase that that utilization would have received in that year. We're just saying that they should get that increase. And then that from there, they should provide the care that's needed to the community.
So if things I'm still a little confused. If utilization really does skyrocket and the risk is on the providers, how do they deal with that?
Well, let's look at how Blue Cross deals with it today. I mean, Blue Cross comes to us with a rate plan. We'll see them in the early spring.
Right.
And by August, we decide how much they can charge each Vermonter within Vermont Health Connect, for example, for a plan or a family. When we decide that, we have to get the number right. We're under tremendous political pressure to say that it's negative 10%. Last year, we picked the number 5.9 based on the math. You know, getting that number right means that Blue Cross's plan is funded properly. This gets to the question of rationing. You know, how do you properly fund a healthcare system? Well, you know, you got to get that number right. If you get it wrong to the downside, Blue Cross has to tap into its reserves. If you get it wrong to the upside, Blue Cross takes in more money than they needed to in that year, and then we have to regulate that out in the next year. And so this would be very similar to that. It's using actuaries that we have to be able to determine the health needs of a population, and then applying that to a provider group. The key thing in the Medicare proposal that we put into the federal government is that we at the state level want to be able to set that rate of growth in concert with our other payers. And we've actually got a better deal than we think Medicare would offer us without this proposal. And so, so we the idea that Medicare would ration because it would be underfunded, we've tried to prevent that in our negotiation. I have no idea what the federal government will say about that, but that's what we're trying to do.
Let's go to our callers and start off with Ted, who's calling from Benson. Hi, Ted. Welcome to the program.
Hi. How are you there?
Great.
My question is, I know you want to pay doctors for outcomes or whether you give them a bonus for their healthy patients. Well, there's a huge number of obese and overweight people. So if you have somebody with diabetes and you want to give the doctor a bonus for getting these patients better, well, what if they go home and sit on the couch and eat Twinkies and watch TV and don't do anything to help themselves? How's the doctor supposed to get paid for that? So that's my concern from swapping from pay to services to some other model.
Yeah, so that's basically what was at root in the earlier question. So when you look at a group of people in a large number, if you said 150,000 or 250,000 people would go into this model, because by the way, the all payer model is not all patients and it's not all providers. It's got to be a coalition of the willing of both groups. But let's say it's a couple hundred thousand people that participated in this. Basically, their health needs before are in the math, and so it's projected forward what they would need. So, if you have a relatively unhealthy population, or if you have a healthy population, that's where you start from. And so, you're not at risk if you start with an unhealthy population compared to your peers, for example.
Let's talk to Omar, who is calling from Montreal. Hi, Omar. What's on your mind today?
Thanks for taking my call. I have a two-pronged question. The first part is, what's the rationale in the U.S.? I'm calling from Canada. So why can't you buy health insurance across state lines, and doesn't that completely destroy the purchasing power of the 300-plus million people in the U.S.? The second part of my question is, why, as far as I understand, does Medicare Part D expressly prohibit the government from negotiating with its full purchasing power on behalf of its constituents with the pharmaceuticals? What's the rationale behind that? And is this not part and parcel of why the current system, the private system, doesn't work? And is there a danger of this repeating itself in a sort of an expanded single-payer system like we have here?
Okay, let's start with the first part, the idea.
Yeah.
And we hear this a lot in this presidential race, particularly on the Republican side, of
right.
folks saying, yeah, buy across state lines, competition, it'll lower rates.
Yeah, so, first of all, I'm not king of the world, so I don't – or, running for president. So, what I say on these two matters with Part D, I don't know that it matters that much, but I'll give my own opinion. I think it's fine if you have insurance across state lines. I'm not opposed to that at all. But let's talk about this. It matters what the doctors get paid. We have over 70 insurers that submit data to VCures, which is our all-payer claims database, which is basically claims for that have happened in the state of Vermont. Mm-hmm. And the question is, what do those contracts from the payers pay the providers? And that determines basically, over time, how much it costs in a fee-for-service environment. And so if you have 100 payers or, five payers, unless there's better pricing to the providers, you're not going to see a win. With Part D, I couldn't agree with you more. It was, it doesn't make sense that we did that, and I'll just say that. As far as, what's going on in Canada versus the United States, I won't opine, other than thank you for all coming down here and being great tourists in the state of Vermont.
Today in the program, our guest is Al Gobay, who's chairman of the Green Mountain Care Board. We're looking at the all-payer health care payment model. Your thoughts, 1-800-639-2211. This is Vermont Edition on VPR. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. With me today, Al Gobay, chairman of the Green Mountain Care Board. We're discussing the all-payer payment model. Your thoughts, 1-800-639-2211. Al, I want to take a stab at this concept to see if I have it right, because you keep talking about how it's really driven by providers and operated by providers. So do you envision that there's going to be this organization, and sometimes it's referred to as an accountable care organization, but let's just say it's this big organization, and it has as members many, many providers across the state of Vermont, and based on the providers and their patient list, this organization is going to get a set amount of money, and then it's up to that organization to decide how that money is going to be dispersed. Am I close?
You are. You are. You're very close.
What am I missing?
I don't think you're missing anything. I think that the key thing to remember is the care continuum is bigger than we traditionally think of it. It's not just a primary care doctor or nurse practitioner or PA and a hospital. It's the Howard Center in Burlington. You know, it's Washington County Mental Health. It's home health. It's the area agencies on aging. It's the FQHCs. It's all sorts of independent providers all throughout the state. And so the question is, how does healthcare get integrated across all of the entire care continuum to try to keep people healthier? You know, that's the concept. And how can providers come together to make that happen if we remove the barriers that payers and government put in their way?
Right now, we're joined by Paul Harrington, who is vice president at the Vermont Medical Society, a group that represents many of the doctors who were employed by local hospitals. Hey, Paul, thanks for being on the program. Paul, are you there? Well, we having some technical problems. Looking for Paul Harrington. We'll see if we can solve those and come back to Paul, because we have a number of providers that we want to talk to today to get their reaction to what's going on. You know, we've gotten a number of emails, Al, that says, you know, the state wasn't very successful with Vermont Health Connect, and that's really undermined people's confidence in government's ability to do big healthcare projects. Is that a factor now, too, that as you look at this big change, that people are going to say, hey, you couldn't get Vermont Health Connect right. What makes you think you can get this right?
Yeah, what I would say is that it's a tremendous factor. It's a factor for everyone who's been affected over the last few years and spent a lot of personal time trying to make that work for them. It's a factor for everyone who's in the legislature that has had to, you know, deal with that. It's a factor that has affected other things that government wants to do that don't have to do with healthcare. You know, I mean, it's a big deal, and I'm not going to shrink from that. But I'll also say that it's a really big deal how much healthcare costs families today, and I don't think we should stop moving forward, to try to improve the health of our population and to make it more affordable. I think that we have to do that. But I'll also say that this is just a proposal and that we're vetting it in a very transparent way. Every Thursday at 1 o'clock, the Green Mountain Care Board has public meetings, and we're taking this thing apart piece by piece to see if it's actually something that's good for Vermont. I wish Paul Harrington did get on, because I think, you know, Paul Harrington is somebody that I respect as much as anybody in the healthcare conversation in the state, and he is smart and tough, and we have to make sure that he will ask us tough questions. If we can't answer them, and also everyone else's questions, you know, then this won't move forward. But I think it's an opportunity we have to really take a tough look at. But I don't. I concede the Vermont Health Connect issue.
I think we've got Paul Harrington on the line. Paul, are you there? Well, we thought we had Paul Harrington on the line. But unfortunately, he's not there, and we've got other people we want to talk to. So did I hear you say, you know, if we can't get this right, or if it's not the way we want it to go, this is not necessarily a road that we're absolutely committed to go down?
Absolutely. I mean, this is not a done deal at all. This is not something that's going to, you know, that somebody's going to force on anybody. Let me say this. Providers have to sign up for this. Patients get attributed to this and can opt out. If this is not a good thing, you have your own free will to not be a part of it. That's very different than Vermont Health Connect. So we need to remember that. And that's why I actually like this idea, because this is actually providers running something and patients involved in it and, you know, in the decision of what they want to do. This is not the state doing something. If it was, I personally would probably not be for it.
So can this work if, I don't know, half of the providers in the state
yes.
decide to be in and the other half say, no, we're going to stick with fee-for-service?
It might even be better that way. And so I've promised every group I've spoken in front of that fee-for-service will not be made, you know, the stick and the other thing made the carrot. You know, so, you know, if we start small and it grows because people like it, that might be the best way to do this. This is not a light switch thing. You know, this is literally something that has to, you know, work on the ground floor, or we shouldn't move forward.
And are you convinced if the state does go forward with this that money will be saved and the quality of care will be better?
I'm convinced that in theory this is a good idea. The practical application of it, that's what I'm working on now to see if that's going to work. You know, we're listening to people every day. I mean, I speak in front of groups every day, and every question we have to answer, and more importantly, we have to work out all the problems of how do you build a Medicaid next-gen program? How do you build a commercial one? You know, we're working on that now. If any of that, you know, appears to not work, you know, we won't do this. I mean, we are not going to, you know, this is not a, you know, force this on anyone game. You know, this is something that a lot of people, and the more people you talk to in the provider community, a lot of people think it's a good idea in theory. Most of their questions have to do with how it could be made possible.
So right now in our healthcare system, we have different payment systems depending on who the payer is. We have Medicare. There's one rate. We've got Medicaid.
No. Medicare pays very differently across a lot of – meaning every hospital doesn't even get paid the same for the same thing in Medicare. That's what seniors need to understand. To providers, Medicare is not the easiest thing to deal with. It has a lot of rules that we could actually get waived that would benefit seniors. And I can give you specifics on those if that would help. But the idea is to make this better.
So you've got all those different Medicare rates. You've got an even lower Medicaid rate.
Yes, you do. Yep.
You have various rates from the different health insurance companies
right.
so that Blue Cross might be reimbursing one hospital one rate and MVP might be reimbursing at a different rate.
Right.
So you've got this jumbled system of different rates. Does that remain in effect if you move to all payer?
No. What we'd like to do, and you talked about it, if you take Medicare money and in a capitated or population-based payment way, make that to a group of providers, for example, OneCare, if you do that and you do that with Medicaid and you do that with commercial under the rules of the programs, of next-gen-esque programs we're talking about here, if you do that, then you've eliminated a lot of that. So there's been a lot of contention between independent docs and hospital-employed docs about the rates that they receive from payers. This would be an opportunity to make that go away. You know, this. By the way, adjusting prices in the healthcare industry and learning how they all get paid, you know, people spend their whole life studying that. You know, this is an opportunity to fix some of that in a big way.
We're going to see if the third time is the charm with Paul Harrington. Paul, are you there?
Bob, yes, I am. Thank you.
Oh, Paul, it's great to hear you.
Thank you.
Just to remind our listeners, Paul Harrington, Vice President of the Vermont Medical Society. Paul, what are your initial thoughts about shifting to an all-payer model?
The Medical Society certainly supports the goals of the all-payer model, and that is to move away from volume-based payment to more outcomes-based payment, and moving from fee-for-service to more upfront payment, capitation, or global payments. The all-payer model is I think Mr. Gobe would agree with me, that is right now just a rough outline. There are a couple key bits of information we don't have any idea of. If it goes forward, we're going to be living under a a growth ceiling of 4.3% per year. And then under that growth ceiling of 4.3%, Medicare would have a somewhat different rate, 0.2% less than the national trend. We don't know how that compares with what the actual cost will be and what the consequences are. The other key thing, and Al Gobay has talked about this at length, is it will require physicians and other health professionals working with hospitals and mental health agencies, home health agencies, together on a coordinated basis. And that's hard work. It's trying to bring the 14 hospitals together, employed physicians, independent physicians, FQHCs together. That's actually probably a bigger lift than the negotiations with the federal government. We don't know if that's going to happen. The Medical Society is concerned that if that doesn't happen, having the waiver in the state basically being able to adjust Medicare payments won't be as successful as it would if we do have a large number of physicians, hospitals, and clinics, home health agencies working together. So there's really two sides to this discussion. We know the terms of the agreement with the federal government. We don't know if we're going to bring those different provider groups, hospitals, physicians, and others together. And the Medical Society believes, as I mentioned to the Green Mountain Care Board yesterday, we probably should not go forward with this waiver if, in fact, we don't have the potential to redesign our health care system under the terms of the waiver.
Al, what about Paul Harrington's concerns?
I think Paul is, pretty much right on. I mean, there's a couple of points he made. One is, what's the critical mass to make this work? And, I've said clearly I want this to be a coalition of the willing, but, Paul's point is right on. It has to be a certain level of participation to be transformative. The second point he made, which is the care continuum, how do we work across that? It is hard work. And what I want the folks that are listening to understand is that, healthcare in our state would be drastically improved if things were coordinated across that care continuum better. That's an opportunity for us. Whether it saves money or not, more importantly, it might make us healthier. And the last thing I want to say, the financial agreements, the Medicare agreement actually has a floor and it has an age adjuster and it has some other things that, would be tough to describe over the radio. I could give it a college try, but the thing that I'm most concerned about is Medicaid, and I think Paul would agree with me that Medicaid develop a program where they're a reliable payer and can participate in this in a meaningful way. We need to hear from the providers by early April in terms of who at least directionally wants to do this. And then we need to understand that Medicaid's going to be able to participate in the spring as well. And all of those things are going to go into the decision about whether or not this is a good idea.
Today in the program, we're looking at the all-payer system. And Paul Harrington, many thanks for being on the program. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, Bob.
Our guest today is Al Gobay, chairman of the Green Mountain Care Board. In just a moment, we're going to hear from some other healthcare providers. This is Vermont Edition on VPR. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. With me in the studio today, Al Gobay, chairman of the Green Mountain Care Board. We're looking at the all-payer model, and right now we're going to talk to Trinka Kerr, who is the state's chief healthcare advocate. Hi, Trinka.
Hi, Bob.
Great to have you on the program. So what are your initial thoughts about this proposal?
Well, we do think there need to be changes. Healthcare costs are drastically increasing. Our concern is that consumers and patients have sufficient protections as these radical changes go into effect. There are a lot of protections already built into that Medicare requires and that exist today for accountable care organizations. But we think with this level of change being proposed that there need to be those protections need to be across all payers, not just protections for people on Medicare, across all payers, and the existing protections should be expanded, and they should be in state law so that consumers can have some confidence that these protections will actually stick and be enforced.
So are you concerned that it's possible that some of the consumers might feel shortchanged by this system and that somehow the system might discourage the providers from giving the patients the care that they need?
Well, it is one of our concerns that access could be reduced because with providers taking on risk, which is what the model calls for, there's an incentive for them to cut costs by cutting care. And how to prevent that underservice is something pretty difficult to figure out how to do that. And I know the plan is to monitor utilization and try to observe changes that way. But that is in kind of after the fact. You can only do that as claims are submitted. We think there also has to be a robust appeal system so that if people feel that they're being denied care because of some accountable care organization policy, that there's a mechanism for them to grieve that and have that reconsidered by some neutral decision makers. So that is one area that we have concerns about, yes.
Trika Kerr, Chief Healthcare Advocate for the State of Vermont, many thanks for being part of the program today.
Sure, thank you.
Al, what about her concerns?
So, I've said publicly that I think that the work they did on a white paper that they produced was really, really good. And that's some of the stuff that Trink is talking about. That was a little while ago, so her thinking has evolved, and that's, that's always a good thing. But let me be clear about a difference between being attributed as a patient to an accountable care organization and actually being a member of Blue Cross. When you're a member of Blue Cross, you've paid for insurance. And if they're not covering your claims or saying that you're not a member or whatever, you can't just switch to another insurance company and get your money back and have your claims paid. So that's a real, real appeal process. When you're attributed to an ACO, the patient has the opportunity to opt out of it. So if you don't like something that's happening because of that, you can just opt out and go back into the fee-for-service world. But I want to make one more point that listeners need to understand. 50% of the practices for primary care in our state today are closed to new patients. Call around Chittenden County and try to get into a primary care practice if you're somebody who just moved here. It's not easy. We just wrote a report on the Howard Center. I'm not picking on them. I love Bob Bick. But the point is that they have a 500-person waiting list. They have 104 vacancies that they can't fill because they don't have the money. They have, less than 19 days cash on hand without their director's reserve. We should be concerned about access today, and I'm very concerned about it.
Let's shift gears and see how Vermont hospitals are viewing this proposal. Joining us right now is Bea Grouse, the executive director of the Vermont Association of Hospitals and Health Systems. Hey, Bea, thanks for being on the program.
Hey, Bob, how are you?
So what are your thoughts about this proposal?
Hold on. We're not going to let her just get away. Bea, this is your last day.
This is my last day, yeah.
Oh, man.
So, my last word. My last word. So.
Before you become a New Yorker.
Exactly. Well, Bob, to get back to your question, I think in our view there are two questions that must be considered together. First, whether we support the policy direction represented by the all-payer model, and second, whether each individual hospital will participate. And so on the first question, we do support the general concept, I think very consistent with the conversation that we've had today. And on the second question, that's really up to each hospital. Every hospital has to decide whether the framework is going to allow them to provide the best care possible for their communities. And that's a much different process than looking at various policies. And I think I'll reference that as well. How are they going to determine whether or not they will provide access? How will the delivery of care be reorganized? What's the impact on their physicians, their nursing community? So there are a lot of different questions that each hospital has to consider, and every hospital is different.
So, B, could you see a situation where some hospitals say, you know, this is not for us?
Sure.
And they would then continue with the current system?
That's right. You know, and I think, as Al said, it's, you know, it's a coalition of the willing. It's voluntary for providers. It's voluntary for patients. So, absolutely, I think every hospital is going to have to do, is required to do their due diligence to make sure that this is going to work for the patients they serve.
B. Grouse is the executive director of the Vermont Association of Hospitals and Health Systems. B., many thanks for being on the program today.
Oh, thank you, Bob.
And right now we're going to bring in Amy Cooper into the conversation. Amy is the executive director of Health First, an organization that's made up of many of Vermont's independent physicians. Amy, what are your thoughts about this?
Hi, Bob. Thanks for having me on. Our thoughts are that we're hopeful that this could be positive for the system if it brings more rationality to how we pay for healthcare services. There are several problems right now with the system that this could address. One, for example, is the pay equity problem on the commercial insurance side, where, as Al mentioned earlier, an independent physician gets paid half what a physician providing the exact same service employed by the UVM Medical Center gets paid currently. We think that this is a way that could resolve some of those issues. We also think this could be positive for increasing investment in primary care. Primary care doctors do the most work in the system taking care of patients with chronic conditions and are currently reimbursed at the lowest level, so that needs to change. The final way that this could be positive is by supporting high-value providers. So those are the providers currently in the system who do offer the most appropriate high-quality service in the lowest cost settings.
And so for your perspective, it sounds like it has potential, but the details need to be worked out?
That's exactly right. You know, there are short timelines until January 1st, 2017 for folks to plan on what comes next. And there's a lot of different organizations that play a role here, whether it's Medicaid or CMS or the hospitals, as you had B mention. So there's a lot that needs to be coordinated in order to get ready for this. And we're just not sure if that's going to happen the right way in the right amount of time or not.
Amy Cooper of Health First, many thanks for being on the program today.
Thank you.
So we've got just a little bit of time left, and hopefully we'll have another program in the not-too-distant future to really flesh this out. But what's the next step now in this process?
So the next step is that, and first of all, I want to thank Amy, because her and her folks have been going to a Monday morning meeting we've had for over a year and spending 3 to 4 hours every Monday working on how we would build a framework document for this. Paul Harrington as well, and B, and all the hospitals and all the insurers. So there's been so much work put into this that the listeners should know about. The next step is I've asked, and we're getting the word out today, but I've asked that – basically, we have three ACOs in the state, and they've been talking about merging or partnering. And I've asked that they decide by March 1st. It's not a date set in stone, but we need to know, to Amy's point, if we're going to get this done. And then for providers, we're going to need to know who would like to participate, non-binding, basically by April, because we've got to build the business models around, you know, what is the scope of this going to be, so that we can make a decision, to Paul Harrington's point, of is this transformative enough? The last thing I want to say, because Amy makes a very, very good point, which is this could do a lot of good. And so that's why I want to do it for 2017. We don't want to do it wrong. That's why I don't want to rush it for 2017. So, you know, it's kind of one of those things. If we build it right, it could do some real good for our healthcare system and for our citizens. If we don't, we should pause it or not do it.
So when do you think you'll know whether or not it's on target for 2017, or if you need to go a little slower?
I think over the next few months, it'll be painfully obvious if it's working or not. I mean, I don't think there's not a date, but, you know, over the next few months, if Medicaid, commercial, CMS, if a whole bunch of things don't come together well, it won't happen for 2017. But I'm optimistic because, again, this can be transformative, and that, you know, that would be great.
So the federal government has a lot to say about this as well.
The federal government has a lot to say about it. The providers have a lot to say about it. The citizens have a lot to say about it. The legislature. I mean, I could make whoever I just forgot is going to call me and be mad at me. But there, you know, this is about bringing along a lot of people if we want to do something transformative.
We'll be following this issue very closely in the weeks and months ahead. Al Gobay, chairman of the Green Mountain Care Board, many thanks for being on the program today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
That is our program for today. Monday is President's Day, and we're looking back to George Washington and the extraordinary journey he made through all 13 states to pitch his vision for America to a new nation. Send your questions and comments to Vermont Edition at vpr.net and listen live Monday at noon. Vermont Edition is produced by Rick Sengary and Sam Gale Rosen with production assistance from Anna St. Marie. Mary Williams directed the program. Our executive producer is Patty Daniels. I'm Bob Kinzel. Have a great weekend.